LGIM Talks is produced by Legal & General Investment Management, providing you with the investment ideas we just can't stop talking about. This podcast assumes a certain level of knowledge of financial markets and is intended for investment professionals.
Well, hi, welcome to the LGIM Talks, and this time we're looking at decumulation demystified. This links around three papers, actually. Justin, welcome. Justin Ukasi, who's our lead fund manager on the multi-index fund range. Justin, warm welcome.
Hi, Paul. How are you? Great to be back in here again with you.
Good. Yeah. It was a long time. It seems like yesterday, actually, we had some fun in here looking at the 4% rule, didn't we, last time?
Yeah. And you're just back from a marathon in Washington, I believe.
Just back from a PB, if that's the right word. Didn't win it this year, but finished in a credible 3 hours 46. So
you won it last year?
There's a long story behind that, Justin. The hotel believed I had won it.
No, well done anyway. You're the fastest time on the sales floor now.
I'm there, and giving the young ones a run for their money. So thank you for pointing that out. So I will emphasise that. Justin, on the serious note, now I think last time we made this rule about not mentioning Man United. I think we can certainly break that one again. And this time we've got three papers. One you covered last time was the 4% rule. You've written another paper, or the team's written another paper about win, lose, or withdrawal, and the most important paper, I think, of the series is this natural income buffer.
Yeah, I agree with that.
If you're comfortable, we'll spend a lot more time on the last one, the income buffer, because we're about sequential risk in it there as well. But let's just put some bit of context around this. The 4% rule, give us a bit of an outline, no more than a minute. What did Bill say about the 4% rule?
You're holding me to a minute. So so Bill Bengen, we've spoken about him in the past. He is an astronomical physicist turned financial advisor. He designed this 4% rule in 1993, where essentially he said that you could withdraw safely 4% in the first year and then adjust that for inflation and take the cash amount every single year from your pension pot, and you would not run out of money over a 30-year time horizon. So there's been a lot of criticisms for his paper that, you know, he didn't include fees, it was a naive asset allocation, the list goes on and on and on. But I do think, you know, if you read some of his papers that he's done since then, he actually does try to clarify and rectify some of those issues. And, you know, if you think about Warren Buffett as the sage of Omaha and Benjamin Graham as the father of value investing, I do think, you know, reading through Bill Bengen's papers, I consider him as the guru of the decumulation or income investing. So it's definitely worth a read.
So what we're saying is really a flexible strategy is the prudent one.
Yeah, we're saying that a 4% rule doesn't necessarily fit all types of clients.
Yeah.
And actually what the 4% rule does lead to or can lead to is really a wide range of outcomes which may not be reflective of the client's attitude to risk.
Okay, perfect. So that leads in really neatly now and in terms of the other two papers, which are now all currently available on LGIM.com. So the first one to look at, the decumulation demystified one, is win, lose, or withdraw, a post-retirement checklist. Now, this one, if I read, goes back to a timely TV programme, well known in the 1990s. Bit before my time, I must confess.
I can't believe that I know about this win, lose or withdraw programme and you don't.
I mean, I was studying. Just you were still at school and I was trying to qualify. Talk us through this, because this is quite important, right? So this is about relevant circumstances. This is about investment objectives, current and future income requirements and investor attitudes to risk, all wrapped into one paper. Give us a quick brief summary.
Yeah, so I think it goes back to the 4% rule. And after we wrote the 4% rule paper and we said, okay, you know, the 4% rule can lead to, you know, vastly different outcomes, that the paper didn't really consider all of the drivers that are relevant for advisors today. So very naive asset allocation, I said, didn't include fees. We thought actually, you know, so what is the, what can you do? What can you do? The advisors are asking as well, okay, you're saying the 4% rule isn't the right number. So what is the right number? And I think it's so important that you try and understand that not one number, that not one, no one size fits all. And really, there's really three key things that I think you have to consider in terms of what is the safe level of withdrawal rate from a pension pot. And really, the three things come under really three headings: asset drivers, spending drivers, and attitude to risk. So let's take the last one first, attitude to risk, because this is the, I suppose, the most important one that advisors talk to us about. They say that, you know, the one thing they want is something that's suitable for their client's attitude to risk, which is one of the reasons why advisors tend to like risk targeted funds, because they feel that can remain consistent to a client's attitude to risk, therefore at least meets one aspect of suitability. The 4% rule clearly doesn't take that into account. So it's so important for an advisor to try and assess what the client's attitude to risk is overall. Then you look at asset drivers and spending drivers. And asset drivers can really be summarised into two key things, really. The size of the fund. Clearly, if a fund is bigger, an advisor would give different advice to a pot which is dwindling. So again, the size of assets is vitally important in order to assess what the safe level of withdrawal is. Then you've got the risk return characteristics of the portfolios of the clients. You know, clearly a more risky portfolio means that you can have a higher expected return, which may mean you may want to withdraw more, but also that leads to greater uncertainty and greater risk. So you've got to take all of those things into account when looking at the asset drivers. Then thinking about spending drivers, these are things which may dictate how much you're willing to spend or how much you want to spend. Maybe things like age. You know, clearly the older you are, if you've got a larger pot, you may be willing to withdraw more. You may want to pass it on to the next generation. Health, you know, poor health, you know, as you get older, health tends to deteriorate and you may need your pot to spend in order to kind of get you through any medical bills that you may have. Tax, and this is something that is more relevant for advisors. Advisors are, you know, tend to be experts in withdrawal rates in terms of sheltering for different tax benefits and different tax costs. And finally, spending patterns. Everyone's different. Everyone will have different spending patterns. And really, you have to understand the psyche of the person who's invested, who holds a pension pot, what they're willing to spend on, what they're not willing to spend on. And again, that's something that the advisor can do with the individual investor.
That's a lot of points there, Justin. That's probably more points than Man United have this year. Sorry, I just breached a golden rule there. The next point I'd like to, that leads us in really neatly into the natural income buffer, which is this third paper. I'd like to spend a bit more time on this because this is the one that can really fundamentally make a difference in terms of how a client transitions from this savings accumulation phase into deaccumulation phase. And I know you manage the multi-index income range, which has a bias towards natural income as well. But I think it's worthwhile taking a step back and exploring both avenues here, both investing, looking at the total return, or just looking at natural income coming out the back. Views here, Justin, in terms of, you know, why did you design, for example, the multi-index income range to be a natural income producing product?
So there's lots of natural income investing funds that in the market. I think that's worth stressing. So advisors have really nailed down and really pinned down what their CIPs, so centralised investment propositions, look like post RDR. In fact, I've got to say, actually, some advisors are still working on them. But you know, they're finessing them. That the CIPs now are really ingrained in an advisor's business. What we were finding is that a lot of advisors were simply using that CRP in the decumulation stage post pension freedoms. Yet the FCA is very clear. They're very clear in that you must think about designing investments to meet investor outcomes. So a lot of the conversations we've been having with advisors is, you know, is your outcome the same on the CRP stage as it is on the CRP stage, so centralized retirement propositions? And the answer overwhelmingly has been no, the outcomes are different. Therefore, the discussion has gone on to say, well, what do you really need? What do you really want from your centralised retirement proposition in this decumulation phase? And a few things or two key risks have come up in that decumulation phase. One is longevity risk, so the risk of outliving your pot. And the second one is sequencing risk. And this is really what this paper, The Natural Income Buffer, tries to address. It tries to address that sequencing risk and how to try and mitigate that sequencing risk.
And let's try and put some numbers around this, because if I'm understanding you appropriately, the sequence risk is the big risk for this, big risk from an investor perspective. So put some numbers behind it in terms of, because on the accumulation, you know, there's a different outcome on accumulation versus deaccumulation. Give some numbers.
Yes. Yeah, so in the paper, what we do is we focus on the accumulation stage and the deaccumulation stage. And we say, if you had £100,000, if you had £100,000 in the year 2000, and you put that into the FTSE All Share, you'd end up in the accumulation stage at around about, you know, close to £250,000 today. So that's investing from 2000 to the end of 2017. But then what we do is we take the FTSE All Share returns and we simply reverse them. And when you reverse them in the accumulation stage, if you're not withdrawing an amount year after year after year, if you started with £100,000 and you invested in a reversed FTSE All Share, so simply taking the returns and putting them the other way from 2017 to 2000, you end up in exactly the same place on the accumulation phase. You end up with, again, you know, 250,000. Now, where it gets interesting is when you look at the decumulation phase. Because in the decumulation phase, if you're withdrawing, let's say 4% year after year after year, if you invest in the actual FTSE All Share, if you invest in the actual FTSE All Share from the year 2000 to 2017, and you put £100,000 in your pension pot, and you're withdrawing 4%, the 4% rule every year, so 4% initially, and then and then that cash amount adjusted for inflation every single year. By the end of 2017, you end up with £50,000, so your pot has been depleted by half. The interesting thing is that if you invested in a reversed FTSE All Share, so simply taking the returns and flipping them, the yearly returns and flipping them, so 2017 return first, 2016, 2015, etc., etc., back to 2000, so reversing the returns, you end up with a pot over £100,000, so about £125,000. So there's a difference in pot size there of £75,000.
Wow.
So, you know, a huge difference. And the question is why? Why do you see this difference, right, Paul?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Hey, why? is that the prompt? Why, Justin? Why would you see this difference?
So the reason why you see this difference, the actual FTSE All Share in 2000, 2001, 2002 had negative returns.
Okay.
So 2000, 6%, negative 6%. 2001, negative 13%. 2002, negative 23%. What does that mean? It means that you are selling down units. You're withdrawing units. That's this 4%. You're withdrawing units when assets are depressed.
Yeah.
So by doing that, it means that you find it very difficult for your pension pot to get back up to the levels that it was.
Yeah.
Because you are essentially depleting units in your pension pot. So it's very difficult then to regain the pot size back up to where it was.
So it's fair to say there that the greater the volatility of the asset class, then the greater the sequential risk.
Yes. No, definitely.
You would say as a multi-asset investor, the really diversification is what you should be looking for as an investor.
Yes,
from one S class.
So one challenge of this study is we do look at just one asset class. We look at just equities. If you looked at a more diversified portfolio, then I think the numbers, it's fair to say the numbers would be less stark.
Okay.
But I think this just really helps to show advisors the impacts of sequencing risk at its worst. And this is really what we're trying to show.
Okay, so market movements are really impacting on the income story. Yeah, yeah.
On the withdrawal story, yes.
Absolutely. And on that point, in terms of volatility, you know, we're looking at 2018 now in terms of volatility, and we've been a bit of a period of grace, I guess, the last 5 years in terms of volatility. But your views on that, because that's quite important in terms of timely takeaway, what's happening in the markets today. You've been quoted in the past saying that whilst volatility has returned to the market, that this is nothing unordinary.
Yeah, so I think this is, you're right. This takes extra relevance given where we are in markets today. So there's a lot of debate on what late cycle means to markets. What a piece of work that we've done shows, actually, when you look historically, late cycle doesn't necessarily mean a jump in volatility. So a lot of investment commentators are saying, you know, volatility is coming. But it doesn't necessarily mean a jump in volatility. But what we would say is, given the extremely low volatile environment we've seen for asset classes since 2008, given this expansion of central bank balance sheets that we've seen predominantly after 2012. So given that huge expansion of central bank balance sheets, this is suppressed volatility. And I think it's very difficult to argue that it hasn't suppressed volatility. So what we are going to see this year is we're going to see the Federal Reserve, for the last year, hasn't been reinvesting bonds that have been maturing. We're going to see the ECB start to taper later this year. What does all of this mean? It simply means the net government bond supply is going to increase, and we're going to go back to normalisation in terms of government bond supply by 2019. We think this increases volatility, or could at least lead to the normalisation of volatility, which again impacts where you are in accumulation and decumulation. What is really important here, and what we haven't yet stressed on, is how do you mitigate this? Yeah. The way you mitigate this is via natural income. Natural income is a way to, if you rely on the natural income of an asset class rather than disinvest in units, what that means is that you are not necessarily selling down units at a time when markets are depressed. You are relying on that natural income to fund your liabilities in the decumulation phase. Now, what we're not saying is that natural income is some panacea. Actually, if you we probably recommend blending a natural income portfolio with a fixed withdrawal type of mandate. Why? Because natural income simply may not be enough to meet your liabilities overall. But in order to create a more certain outcome, blending a fixed withdrawal policy, as you see in our paper, with a natural income proposition, we think makes a lot of sense.
So natural income and capital second.
Yes.
Yeah.
Perfect. Spot on.
Perfect. So that draws, I think, us to, we've covered the main points of the paper, Justin, in the promised time allowance. Thank you once again. Have you got one more point? So you got one more point?
Yeah. The only thing I wanted to mention is this is a series, and there'll be a number of other papers coming out under this decumulation demystified series. The idea, as Paul's already mentioned, is to really guide advisors in that decumulation phase and help them in building their centralised retirement propositions.
And it's a phase which is only going to grow.
Exactly.
With pension reform post. Now, I read somewhere recently that 200 billion of the 600 billion that sits on platforms already is in the decumulation phase and will grow going forward. So really timely. Thank you for that, Justin. There's one final favour I can ask you in terms of if you found this of value, this podcast, hope you did, please, if the three pleases, review and rate on iTunes, that would be much appreciated, A, to get the feedback, but also in terms of recognising that they are adding value. So there needs to be real takeaways, and I think from what Justin's already talked about in terms of sequential risk, be aware of it, you can manage it. It's an advisor process that needs to be managed in conjunction with clients' outcomes. So Justin, thank you once again, and thank you.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in Legal & General investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.